Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
You're listening to the Back Home Network, presented by Home Field Apparel.
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to this week's edition of Assembly Call Radio, where each week we discuss the most important topics in the world of Indiana basketball. This is our 329th edition of Assembly Call Radio, and it is our 1,027th episode overall of the Assembly Call, recorded on the evening of April 4th, 2023. I am your host, Jared Morris. And let's begin this edition of the Assembly Call how we begin every edition of the Assembly Call, and that is with our Hoosier Proud banner moment.
And Indiana is the national champion.
When it comes down.
Takes a shot.
The Hoosiers have won the national championship.
This week's banner moment occurred on Tuesday night when, for the third straight season and 10th out of the last 14, a future Indiana Hoosier played in the McDonald's All-American game. Bryson Tucker, Indiana's recent five-star commit from Arlington, Virginia, played 12 minutes in the game, going 1-for-3 from the field and scoring 3 points. He also got 2 steals. Tucker's East squad won the game 88-86, led by big games from Boogie Fland and Derek Queen, two names many IU fans will be familiar with. So what does that matter? Well, longtime listeners of the show are familiar with my annual reminder about how important, historically speaking, McDonald's All-Americans have been for making deep tournament runs, even if it hasn't applied specifically to Indiana over the last 20 years. Now, it's not a prerequisite, of course. Purdue, famously, has no McDonald's All-Americans this season, but it sure has helped other schools in the past. All but 4 of the teams to win the NCAA Men's Championship since 1978 have had at least one McDonald's All-American on their rosters. The exceptions are the 02 Maryland Terrapins, boo, the 2014 UConn Huskies, the 2021 Baylor Bears, and the 2023 UConn Huskies. So, for a long time, if the goal has been hanging a banner, recruiting McDonald's All-Americans has increased your odds of doing so. It's possible that's changing, by the way. UConn won it all without a Burger Boy last season, and in fact, the 2023 Final Four was the first in which no McDonald's All-Americans participated. This year's Final Four features just one McDonald's All-American, Stephon Castle from UConn. And in this era of change in college sports, it's important that we constantly challenge old accepted notions against new evidence. Perhaps in the age of the portal and player movement, rostering McDonald's All-Americans won't be quite so predictive moving forward. But any way you slice it, adding one of the top perceived talents in a high school class is a good thing. For Mike Woodson, it was close to necessary given the close recruiting losses of Fland and Queen, the decommitment of Liam McNeely, and the 7 open spots on the roster. Now we'll wait and see what Tucker brings to Bloomington. Mackenzie Mbako was a McDonald's All-American last year and then struggled mightily out of the gate before coming along enough to win Big Ten Freshman of the Year. He'll be a key piece for IU this season. If Tucker can have a similar impact during his first year at IU, it will go a long way toward IU bouncing back from a disappointing 2023-24 season. Okay, now let me introduce my co-host this week. Coach is out. He took the night to attend the NIT final at Hinkle Fieldhouse between Indiana State and Seton Hall. Unfortunately, that did not go Indiana State's way. What looked like a thrilling game. I know. I didn't get to see it. I saw it was 70-70. Then Indiana State goes on a 7-0 run, but then Seton Hall looked like scored the last 9 points. So must have been thrilling. But you know what, Coach, the Tonsoni family, even though they were rooting for Indiana State because of their, you know, their kind of family ties to Indiana State, it's been such a great week for them anyway. If you didn't hear, Coach and Amy recently welcomed their first grandchild into the world. Big time applause for that. So it's been a very exciting week in the Tonsoni household, and I don't think anybody could mess that up, even a basketball game. But here with me this week, we have the Josh Schertz of Girls U Sports Coaching in Cincinnati, the president emeritus of the Robert Johnson Fan Club, and one of the world's most respected bracketologists.
Best of you sports coaching, you know that we got them. When it comes to analytic trends, you know he can spot them. For first class bracketology, if you want the top, you gotta go bottoms. If you want the top, you gotta go bottoms.
Andy, what is your bottoms line on the last week in Indiana basketball or college basketball?
Yeah, it's just really been the NIT final was no exception. Just a couple weeks of really good basketball, whether it be the men's tournament, the women's tournament, the NIT, any of it. And so lots of exciting games there. Looking forward to the Final Four over the course of the weekend. And from an IU perspective, a lot of it is tracking different guys in the portal and who might be visiting. I think as we, you know, talked through last year, the ones that are scheduling visits are the ones to really dig in a little bit more on. And so obviously lots of different pieces to fall from a roster perspective for IU, and try my best to, you know, even as you go through and look at these individual pieces, like none of that really means a whole lot until you step back and see what the final roster looks like and how it all fits together. I think you can make cases for or against different pieces depending upon what you're looking at, different names that get floated out there, and all those things. But until you see the totality of what, you know, what comes together, I think that's when you can really start to, you know, kind of figure out what that might mean for style of play and all those kinds of things. So for now, it's a lot of names. Some I've watched a little bit more than others over the course of the season, largely if their teams had anything to do with the NCAA tournament and were in the mix for that. And some of them didn't see as much because they weren't. But lots to follow in that regard, but I've really enjoyed the tournament, the tournaments, plural, over the last couple weeks.
All right. And also here with me, he is a senior writer for The Big Lead, a shot doctor who is just patiently waiting for a client to call, and the world's biggest sucker for amazing Tony Gwynn hitting stats. And in honor of the baseball season starting, I will give you my favorite Tony Gwynn hitting stat after Ryan's musical intro.
Analyzing players, finding every wrinkle. He hasn't ever hosted, never lifted a finger. He's got all the
answers. Well, let me quickly add just one thing about this.
Dude just interrupted his own jingle.
All right, so obviously Tony Gwynn never hit 400 for a full season, though he came close in the strike-shortened 1994 season that would have ended in a White Sox World Series. That's just generally agreed upon.
White Sox Expos in that one?
Yes, yes. They were on a collision course. So that year, Tony Gwynn hit 394 through 110 games, but was hitting 423 in the second half of the season, so it is fair to reasonably wonder where he'd have ended up. But here's my favorite stat. Even with all of that, Gwynn did hit 400 across a 179-game span between July 3rd, 1993 and May 9th, 1995. In fact, he hit 403 in those 697 at-bats. That is my favorite Tony Gwynn hitting statistic of all time.
Tony Gwynn, and I got to interview him a few times when I was really young, and I went to baseball camps he was the coach at. One time during the strike, I was working with a hitting instructor, and it was this little like warehouse that was the size of my apartment. I mean, it was like a shed basically with two batting cages, and I walk in for my lesson and who was hitting in the other one? And it was Tony Gwynn, and somebody else was, their lesson was going long, and they said, "Hey Tony, can you hop out so this kid can get in?" And there was no like, "Hey, let me get five more." And he's like, "Yep." And he like pops out, waits, like,
and I'm just standing there looking at it like, you're Tony Gwynn. And I, you know, I'm hitting in front of Tony Gwynn too. I wasn't nervous or anything, you know, the greatest hitter on the planet. And then the kid who was getting the lesson next to me, he would just do the same thing. His eyes were dinner plates and he walked out to the car and his dad must've been like, go ask him if he's got a bat or something you can have. And he walked, he's like, Mr. Gwynn, can I have a bat? And he gave him a broken one that he had like taped back together. And he just gave it to him. He's like, yeah, sure. Wow. But the thing you learned about Tony is he was an incredibly nice guy, but when you asked him about his own game, he was not a BSer. He would never talk himself up. He would talk himself down, if anything. You ask anyone who asked him, would you have hit 400 in 1994? And he unequivocally said, yes. He's like, I was on a roll like I would never believe I would have absolutely hit 400. And he's not somebody who would say that about himself if it wasn't true. So it is one of the great missed opportunities in sports history. But his idol was Ted Williams, and that's the last guy to do it. So I guess it lines up there.
Anyway, thoughts on Indiana sports?
No. you opened that door, Jared. Don't get mad at me.
I'm not mad. It's the off-season.
I think that, you know, Mackenzie Mbako, since the last time I've been on, Mackenzie Mbako decided to come back. They got Bryson Tucker. I think when you're looking at potential portal guys at this point, they need a rim protector. They need a point guard, essentially. I think that that's, we know that, but I also wouldn't start. And, you know, Andy kind of hinted at this. I wouldn't start piecing the roster together based on the early commits. Now they're also in talent collection mode because there is a dearth of talent. You know, there just aren't enough guys. And so if they bring guys in, you're like, well, how does he fit? Well, wait till they finish, you know, and then you can kind of start mapping that out. Because I think right now you see a bunch of the guys that they're trying to line up for visits are kind of interchangeable. And people are like, well, what are they going to do with all these guys? It's like, let them figure it out. There's a huge amount of NIL money. They've been using it so far. I have a feeling they will continue to do so at a high rate. I think that given the situation heading into next season with the program and I don't want to talk about this, but the coaching staff and all of that, they're going all in and they are going to try and turn this thing around by getting as much talent as possible. So I think in some ways, I do think they'll need a point guard and a rim protector. But other than that, it's just talent collection mode and let's figure it out. And hopefully it does work out. But you also have to remember there are a couple hundred other schools trying to get the exact same guys and offering a lot of money for those guys as well. So, you know, if they miss out on people, that's kind of expected at this time of year. So we'll see how it all lines up. But it is just talent collection mode at this point because this roster needs it.
Yes. And so speaking of talent collection, we're going to talk about that on this episode of the Assembly Call. We'll flip it from the run sheet, fellas. Let's do the Bryson Tucker scouting report first. And then we'll talk about just some of the portal news. You know, there's been a few visits lined up and, you know, kind of if there's anything to glean from there, a few names to look out for. And then we'll end with a few Final Four thoughts before we get out of here. All of that coming on this week's edition of Assembly Call Radio. Now let's talk about our presenting sponsor. Yes, this edition of Assembly Call Radio, just like all shows on the Back Home Network, presented by our friends at Home Field Apparel, where they have the largest collection of vintage IU apparel that you will find anywhere, including this hat. This is my new Home Field Apparel obsession, is the snapback hat. I don't know about you guys, but it's always tough for me to find hats that really fit my head. I know some people like fitted hats better, some like others. All I know is this hat, and I got the one with the old school bison on it, fits my head better than any hat I've ever put on. Plus, it looks cool, and it's got a cool story with the bison. And this is one of thousands upon thousands of items that Home Field Apparel has, whether it's Indiana University or 150, 60, 70 colleges and universities that they have represented there. Unique logos with cool backstories, printed nicely on comfortable material. You can put it in the wash. And it's just awesome stuff. And you're supporting an Indiana-based company that has supported us and done so many other great things in the community. So go to homefieldapparel.com. Use our promo code HOME23 and you'll get 15% off your first order. But also check their socials, check, you know, their email list, because you can get other better discounts that you want to watch out for. But if you don't have, you know, any better one, then use ours, HOME23, for 15% off. Once again, the website, homefieldapparel.com, wear one for the team. Okay, so let's jump in and let's talk about Bryson Tucker. You know, typically it's kind of what we'd all what we've always done here, Ryan. When a guy commits, we do a full scouting report on him, kind of talk about, you know, just their game, what we've seen, strengths, weaknesses, things they'll have to work on when they get into college. What is your initial impression of young Bryson?
Yeah, I think, you know, and I'm going to do kind of an overview just because Tony really broke this down and did a really good job with it. So I encourage people to go to our site and look that up. He did a really good job with video.
The IU attempt. Film room.
Yeah,
I'll put a link in the show notes.
Also, my work life has been kind of insane lately. If you've been reading anything online, you know about that. Can't really talk about it, but you go search. It's fun. But I did get a chance to watch a decent chunk when he first committed, and then I did some research on him today. He's 6'6". He's listed at 180. I would assume he'll probably be like 190, 195 by the time he plays for Indiana. He's a three at this point. He's not a two. A lot of people have been like, oh, you can play him at two. No, he's a three. He's an attacking off the wing guy. Excellent around the rim. He's really long. He gets out in transition. He's fast. He's athletic. Great finisher around the rim. The shot is an issue. Which I feel like we've said with a lot of IU recruits in the past, but in the recent past, he's a pretty good mid-range jump shooter. And the reason why is when he shoots, his body over rotates. And for shorter distances, you can get away with that. The further you move away, the harder it is. He also likes to pull up too. And I think off the pull up, it's more in rhythm as opposed to a catch and shoot. You're in your own rhythm. You don't have to wait on somebody else to get the ball to your palm the right way you like it and all of that. I preferred to shoot off the bounce too. And it was just because the timing was
That's because no one would pass to you.
You're right. Because they knew they weren't getting it back. I think that it's a timing thing for a lot of guys. And it's easier to get in rhythm. Kobe Bryant was a timing shooter. Plenty of other guys throughout the years. Michael Jordan was a timing shooter.
Jalen Hutchinson.
There you go. That's absolutely true. That's why he could make those long jumpers if he caught them. I mean, he got better at the catch and shoot three, I will say, towards the end of his freshman year. Yeah. But this is a kid who plays off the bounce mostly. And if you watch his three-point shot, he doesn't get a lot of air on his jump, and it comes out flat. Yep, exactly, Jared. It's a line drive. And that's because if you watch the highlights, his legs are not involved in the shot very much. And if he just got a little bit extra height on it, he might be able to get over the rim in that way. I will say also, and you can see it on the highlights, a lot of times he'll come off a screen and his feet will be facing where the ball is coming from. And then he'll turn his shoulders and shoot while his feet are still facing the wrong way. That means you're fighting against your body and you're not getting your whole body behind the shot. It's like I always tell people in baseball, when you're throwing a pitch, your shoulders, when you release it, need to be where it's going to go. And that way you have your whole body behind it. You're twisting your body into it. It's the same with basketball. You have to be facing where you want to go and where you want the ball to go. And if your feet are one way and your shoulders are the other, you're kind of twisted up. So I do think he rotates on his shot a lot. As far as I really like what I've seen defensively, I really like what I've seen just athleticism wise. He's a great finisher. I think he can finish with both hands from what I've seen too. He's a guy who's going to want to run. And I think that Indiana has to do more of that next year, given the problems that this program has had in half court offensive situations and getting bogged down and being slow in the half court. When you have athletes like this, you need to take advantage of it. Mackenzie Mbako can get out on the break. Trey Galloway can get out on the break. Bryson Tucker can get out on the break. You need to move bodies fast. If you're Indiana, take advantage. You're recruiting all these athletes that have NBA style athleticism. Take advantage of it in some way instead of standing them still in a half court scenario. So I like what I've seen from him physically. The shooting, it's going to be an issue. And I think also guys who transition to the next level struggle to shoot as it is. And so I think the learning curve is going to be very steep for him to become a good 3-point shooter. I don't think he's not a one and done. He's a multi-year guy. I think I just don't see it, partly because of his frame and partly because I just don't think the game is well-rounded enough for the NBA. And there's so much emphasis on shooting. That's the thing he's missing. I did text with you guys about it. I do think the shooting profile is very similar to Jalen Hood-Schifino. He likes to get to the middle of the floor and he likes to pull up. He can hit threes again, but it's not a strong part of his game. And he's actually a really good passer as well. And I really liked what I saw there. Getting teammates open, finding teammates at the 3-point line, getting it inside. He draws so much attention that when he's driving that he, and he knows how to distribute. So I like what I see. He's a really nice player. I think he's a bench guy as a freshman. Maybe, you know, if you have a veteran coming off the bench first, maybe he's second, but certainly an improvement on the bench for Indiana. And maybe a guy who starts as a sophomore in Mackenzie Mbako's spot when he's gone.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like you said, I mean, just the way he can get out in transition, his competence in transition, is going to, you know, give him the opportunity to score early. I mean, that when you look at some of his numbers, his high school numbers from this last season, you know, he was, you know, finished 64-65% of the time in transition. Struggled a lot more with his, you know, just mid-range shooting, his outside shooting, his free throws were only in the high 50s, you know, which I think is a little bit of a concern when you're talking about the three-point shot translating. So, yeah. You know, I do think there are some valid questions there. The other thing that I noticed in addition to what you said is, you know, and you'll have to see him in a college offense, but he really seems like a relatively high IQ player offensively, just in terms of, you know, knowing when to cut. I thought in the McDonald's All-American game, he had a couple of smart cuts that he could have scored on, but it just didn't get a good pass. And just, you know, kind of his understanding of spacing and where to be, how to keep the floor spaced, you know, what to do after he sets a screen, all those things. He seems to make pretty good decisions there. You know, and so hopefully he can make up for, you know, what may be, you know, a slow jumper to come around, you know, by being able to find other ways to get involved.
I think one issue with his jumper too is being 6'6". If he's guarded by bigger guys at the three, he's going to struggle a little bit because it does come out a little low. And I think getting the shot off will be difficult. Yeah. So again, there's tweaks to that jump shot. I actually really like his release. I think it's a snapped release. The ball comes off well. It's just the bottom half is working against him. And he needs to figure that out. And you know what? A lot of kids coming up are having that nowadays that aren't pure shooters because they start shooting three-pointers so young now that it messes up all the mechanics across the board. And if you are a parent of a kid, do not let them shoot three-pointers consistently until they are eighth grade, ninth grade, because they get their whole body behind it instead of just their arms, and they carry that through to high school, and it creates horrible form, and it doesn't work for them long term.
This edition of Parent Corner with Ryan Phillips brought to you by the Bill Simmons Show.
Hey, look, if anybody here knows how to parent, it's... No, that was a shot doctor advice right there.
It was. No, you're 100% right about that, too. Andy, your thoughts on Bryson?
Yeah, I haven't watched it. I watched Tony's breakdown. I watched about half of the McDonald's All-American game. Not that I think you can really draw conclusions about much of anybody in a situation like that. You know, it's kind of a you better shoot when you get it because you may not see it again. I thought, yeah, some of what you said, Jared, of, you know, the cuts. It's like you're lucky you even got the pass on the cut, let alone if the pass was good or not.
Yeah.
But I would echo a lot of what you guys said. I think you see somebody, and again, this goes back a little bit to trying to figure out, okay, how does he fit into the larger picture once you know what the whole roster is? What I think he gives you is a guy who seems to profile as someone who can be a good defender, and a potentially versatile one at that, just good length. And so I think, you know, the athleticism can help in that, get him in the system, and figure out what they want to do there. I think that's a positive with all the switching they ran at different times over the course of last season. I think he's a guy who can, you know, hold his own against a few different positions. Definitely, you know, struck me even in the McDonald's game, was really getting up and down the floor well, as you'd expect in that scenario. But you also see guys kind of dog it in some of those scenarios, either thinking like, I'm not going to get the ball. And so I think, you know, you look at him as a guy who could do some things in transition in that way. And so I think, you know, again, it's kind of the age old thing with IU where you have somebody who may not be a great shooter. If you can find other pieces around him that are good shooters, he's a guy who can drive a little bit and use some of his athleticism in that regard and things like that. So I think, you know, if you look at a guy as, I think this is the other part of all of this, where you start looking at what's the overall roster looks like, is trying to figure out like roles and playing time and starters and all that stuff. And it's like, you know, I think there's a part of you that can say, all right, well, it's a McDonald's All-American, five-star guy. Is he really going to come in and sit the bench? But then I think from what, you know, listening to Ryan talk about it, like, what is the scenario where he would be able to start? The scenario where he would be able to start is Malik Renew playing the five and Mackenzie Mbako playing the four, which I think you may see in part. Easy there. But I think you may see in parts of the games, but I don't think that's probably going to be the primary you know, set up for IU, in which case there really isn't a place for him to start if you think of it that way. So, but I do think he gives you the versatility from a lineup perspective to be able to do that at times, even if that's not how you're going to start games. So,
and the reason you couldn't start him at the two is the ball handling, the creation just aren't really there and won't be there as a freshman.
You know? Yeah. And I don't think you're putting him in a position where he can be as successful in that scenario either. Yep. To me, you're going to want to bring him in a place where he's a little bit more comfortable and things like that. So I think a lot of potential. I think a guy that will certainly be exciting, you know, from an athleticism standpoint. And so I think as you start to see the other things filling around him, you can maybe start to piece together lineups or situations in which he can be the most successful.
One other interesting note about Bryson Tucker, his dad played basketball in college, grew all the way to 6'10", 1,000-point scorer. He started at NC State and then transferred somewhere. I don't remember where.
They had transfers back then?
Yeah, they did. Had to sit out a year, but guys did transfer. So it's possible, you know, when Bryson is young, it is possible that he's still growing as well. And so a little bit of potential there. But, you know, look, I think the bottom line is, you entered this offseason with 7 open scholarships, you know, because you have a 5-star freshman who decommits in Liam McNeely. You know, I think most observers would say that Liam McNeely is a better overall player than Bryson Tucker. They do different things, but most people, I think, would rate, you know, Liam McNeely a little bit higher. But, you know, Tucker is not fair to call him a consolation prize, but he's right up there, you know, where it's a, you know, a great recruitment to get. At least starts to build a foundation, you know, for filling up the rest of these scholarships. And there's a lot of potential there. So, you know, that's a good guy to, you know, to be able to start off with, maybe on the bench, and then you kind of see where it goes as he goes through his freshman year. Do you guys have any other takeaways from the McDonald's game? I don't know if you guys...
I didn't watch the whole thing. I just saw clips.
So the funniest moment, Liam and Bryson were on the same team. And so... Bryson Tucker drives the baseline and Liam is over in the left corner. Could not have been more wide open. There was, you know, no one within a mile of him. Tucker doesn't pass to him and instead takes this contested two that he missed. And you could tell, you know, Liam is, you know, shoulder slumped. It was obvious he should have passed to him. I'm not saying he didn't, you know, I think he just didn't see him or just wanted to take the shot.
Freeze him out, Bryson.
Yeah. I don't think Liam passed to him the rest of the game. I did not see it happen once. So, you know, I don't know if there's anything there, but it was just funny to watch. I tell you what, Rutgers is going to be dangerous next year.
We've Harper known that for a Bailey. While now, though.
I know, but seeing those guys and seeing some of the improvements Harper has made, I mean, you know, Rutgers is kind of cleaning house. I mean, they've had a lot of guys go into the transfer portal, but boy, yeah, are those two talented. My goodness.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see what they put together around them, because I think you can tell yourself, had Omoruyi still been there and things like that. It's like, I mean, for him, that would seem like a good thing. Like, those are guys who are going to get easy baskets, and you don't have to be
– He's chasing,
you know, a focal point. Oh, no doubt.
He's got it.
But that seemed – so it'll be interesting to see what they fill in around them. But those are certainly two good pieces to start with.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think you saw why the staff was so excited about the potential of Boogie, Derek Queen, and Liam McNeely.
Really?
Yeah. I mean,
I could see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
it was on full display.
What's interesting
Liam struggled in the part that I only watched about the first half. Like, he didn't really do as much, but yeah, I mean, all the things that you read and heard about, you know, the others were on display. Yeah. But I also am pretty hesitant to make any kind of major judgments based on the McDonald's game. It devolved. It seemed like the beginning, like it was pretty competitive and everybody, and then it devolved pretty quickly. I felt
the NBA All-Star game.
Second quarter rolled around, but like the beginning, I was like, people are really kind of defending out here or whatever. And then it was like, as gradually, like, it kind of settled into what you expected it to be.
It reminded me of Hoosier Hysteria, like kind of a couple minutes looks fun. And then it's all just, let's have a good time. Put on a show. Yeah. I remember when it used to be competitive, though. I do remember there was a big thing, East versus West, but now those guys all play each other all year round. You know, it used to be they'd face each other maybe once or twice a year, and that was the biggest stage for it. So they'd go after each other. Now these guys are playing all the time. So it's not really that big a deal. But yeah, I mean, it's funny with Rutgers getting those two guys, and obviously they've got a great coach, but it feels like Vanderbilt the year with Darius Garland and a few other guys. Like, you're kind of like, what's the plan other than those guys? Like, I mean, that's a great starting point, but what's the plan around them? And they wound up not doing a whole lot. I think Rutgers will, though. I just think they need to find the guys to put around them.
Yeah, it'll also be interesting with them, though. I mean, for as much as Pikel is a defensive guy, that's an area where young players can struggle getting in initially. They're going to, you know, more than make up for that on offense, but how big a deal is it going to be able to be if they don't buy into what he wants them to do,
right?
Defensively, or even pace of play, things like that. Like, feel like he's got to make some changes to what he would normally do.
Well, Harper knows what he's getting into too.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
So I, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that pans out.
Yeah.
Yep. All righty. Let's move on here. We do have some more recruiting offseason stuff to talk about. We've got some portal visits, some names to keep track on. Andy has a little bit of research on how teams have done that brought in a lot of portal guys, and we'll talk a little bit of Final Four. That's coming up next. Stick with us. Ryan, do you want to hang around for the next segment?
Yeah, I'll do the next segment. Okay. One question. How many scholarships are open now?
Six.
It's six. Okay. I wasn't sure if it was six or seven now. But I guess with McKenzie coming back.
Yeah, that's including McKenzie and counting Khalil out.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, just a good old-fashioned Big Ten three-point shootout here. Jameson Battle and Boo Booey.
Oh, really?
Not really against each other. They were just shooting at the same time in the first
round. Are they doing it in Arizona?
It's at Grand Canyon.
Okay, so they still do it in the town that the Final Four is in.
Did I see that Boo Booey won like a National Defensive Player of the Year award?
I believe that is true. Yes.
Wow, I didn't expect that. I mean,
Boo Booey on defense? I mean, he's good on defense.
He's a good defender. I wouldn't think National Defensive Player of the Year award.
No, I wouldn't either.
Did he even win it in the Big Ten?
I'm not sure.
I certainly hope so.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, you'd think so. I don't know. That just seemed odd. Yeah. Okay. Let's do it. Here we go.
Hey, guys. It's Gene Steratore, CBS officiating analyst and retired Big Ten basketball official. You know, I have never listened to the assembly call, and to be honest, I don't intend to. But if you listen, make sure you ignore anything Ryan says about officiating. He's really good from the seat of his pants, but I wouldn't trust him on the court with a whistle around his neck. Time has proven him wrong on virtually everything. Take care. We'll talk soon.
We will talk soon. Thank you, Gene.
We have to back have to the assembly on. Call.
Gene, he's getting back into the game with the officiating.
We need to have him on just because, hey, man, you promised we'd talk again.
I know.
So
We do. We'll have that follow-up conversation. I'm Jared Morris here with Ryan Phillips and Andy Bottoms. So, guys, we talked about the loan commitment that Indiana has so far this offseason, Bryson Tucker, five-star forward. And now Indiana has six scholarships left to fill, and obviously all eyes are on the transfer portal for the Hoosiers. So just a couple news and notes here, and then we can kind of break this down. There is a dead period coming up. Starts today, actually, April 4th, goes through April 11th. That's basically there so that the coaches can go to the convention and go to the Final Four, you know, and be able to do all that stuff without having to worry about recruiting. I don't think any contact is allowed. That doesn't mean that it doesn't still happen. But you're not going to see a whole lot of activity, commitments, that type of thing, probably for the next week. IU did make the final six for Tony Perkins, the point guard from Iowa, originally from Indianapolis. He will have 1 year left to play. I know Lawrence Missouri, North. A few other schools are in there. See Lawrence North?
Lawrence North, I think.
Someone in the chat will know.
Someone will know.
So we'll wait for his decision. And then two important visits set up, both of these for the weekend of April 19th through the 21st, which is Little Five weekend. Kanaan Carlisle from Stanford, a combo guard, and then Amari Williams, a transfer from Drexel, a big man, 6'8", 6'9", really good player, good rebounder.
Shot blocker.
Yeah, shot blocker, and actually likes to catch the ball facing the basket, good passer. So kind of an interesting guy. To potentially pair with Malik Renew. So those are definitely two names, you know, because there are visits, those are definitely two names if you're not familiar with, I would get familiar with. Another name to know is Miles Rice from Washington State, a guy who actually sat out his first 2 years of college, redshirted, then had a cancer diagnosis, but then came back to play this year. His first season led them to the NCAA tournament. Really exciting guard. And so there's no visit scheduled yet, but by all accounts, it does seem like Indiana has a lot of interest and that there may be a connection there. Rice and Kenan Carlisle both played for AAU teams down in Georgia, where obviously Coach Yaw has some connections. And then the other name to know, Connor Hickman from Bradley, who went to Bloomington South High School. He's already taken a visit to Indiana. It sounds like he may take a few other visits, but Indiana certainly in the running there. So, Andy, your thoughts. Those are some of the names that have emerged, you know, and so you can kind of see what the vision is from a guard perspective for what Indiana's looking to do. But just any takeaways, you know, obviously not a lot to go on with no commitments yet, but anything that you take away from these visits.
Yeah, I just had to shake off a little PTSD from watching Tominaga rain threes. He scored 25 in his first outing, had plenty of time left on the last rack, basically stood there, talked to somebody, bounce the ball a couple times, waited until the last second to let the ball go, then turned around as soon as he shot it because he knew it was going in. So wow, just a little
okay,
little,
Steph.
Yeah, like, a little too soon. A little too soon for me. For
treating
many
it like a first half against Indiana.
Yeah.
But I'm changing. So.
Anyway, no, I think, you know, as you look at the guy, I think from a guard perspective, you know, you've got some different profiles there. As you look at those guys, of the ones listed, you know, kind of like I was saying before, certainly seeing a little bit more of Miles Rice than the others, just because he was on a team that was at least in the running for the tournament, eventually made it. So saw him. So I think you got a guy there who was really, really effective at getting to the free throw line, put up good efficiency numbers, even without shooting a high percentage from three. If you look at that. So I thought he really, great story too. You know, they did a number of stories about him coming back from you know, cancer and the treatment and all of those kinds of things. So a really, you know, really good story. I think that, you know, speaks well of his just ability to, you know, persevere in a lot of ways. So was really adept at getting the free throw line, was able to you know, make a pretty high percentage once he got there. I think was over 80% there. Decent assist numbers, and like I said, even without shooting, a great percentage from deep was pretty effective. You look at Carlisle, hard to gauge, was injured at the beginning of the year. Stanford stunk. You got, you know, a lot of things there that I think are a little bit difficult to get a great read on in that regard. You know, certainly was not an efficient player in his time there. It just kind of turns into a question of whether you believe that was the situation or how reflective that is of his overall skill set. I know it was pretty highly regarded from a recruiting standpoint coming in. You know, then you look at Hickman, at least of the other guards, is the one with a really high shooting pedigree. Shot the ball extremely well at Bradley over the course of the season.
Indiana kid who could shoot.
Yeah, I know. Go figure.
Those exist.
I mean, a huge jump though for him. It's kind of interesting if you look back at his career. He shot 39% from three as a freshman. That dipped to 33% as a sophomore, and then bounced up to over 40%. Made 41% in conference play. So
on more shots too.
Yeah, which was So I, you know, again, I think you look at that, and he just kind of seemed like a down year as a sophomore. Don't follow Bradley well enough to know maybe what would have contributed to some of that. But I think he's the one I think people will more easily get excited about. One, Bloomington kid, two, you know, great shooting numbers, and that fills a huge need for the team.
And a guy who shoots off movement, can shoot off cuts, which is, you know, something we haven't really had.
Yeah, good spot up guy. I mean, the numbers, I think Tony, what he put out with like 98th percentile and spot up shooting and things like that. So I think that's the one that kind of gets people's attention because it feels that such a glaring need. But I think Rice has a lot of room to grow as well. Even, you know, just kind of coming back and playing competitive basketball for the first time, you know, in a while this year. And then you look at, you know, the big guy Williams. I think great rim protection and rebounding is what you really, the numbers that really jump off the page when you look at stuff with him. Did you know, shot three threes. You know, he's not going to be a Khalil Ware type guy that's going to go out and shoot threes, but was able to, you know, drew tons of fouls, was able to get to the free throw line at a pretty high rate. And so I think you look at those things and I think people rightfully so will try to figure out, okay, what does that say? If you get him, what kind of lineup are you going to run? How do you avoid clogging the lane? Because he's a guy who's, you know, catching
not strictly a post up guy. You know, he can face the basket some, even if he's not a shooter.
He just can't shoot. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I think it just, So I think people's thoughts will immediately go to, okay, what does that really mean? And I think as you go to some of those other questions, it again, taking him doesn't preclude you from having a good offense. You just have to figure out how you surround guys and how you, you know, create sets and spacing that allow for that not to be an issue and utilize his strengths where he's really good rebounder, good on putbacks, things like that. So I think you can start to, you know, the guards is, even though that's what there is the most of on the current roster, I think there's still a huge need for that. So I think you look at those guys and try to figure out, you know, what you may be able to get out of those. And I think they're each bring some different qualities to the table that, you know, are worth looking at. You know, the Pac-12 guys obviously were excited about being a part of the Big Ten. So really want to, you know, get a chance to still experience that, I'm sure, as we think about them. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, some interesting names. And like we said before, once you get some visits scheduled and things like that, you can start to, you know, really feel like these are guys that the staff has honed in on, whether they get, you know, what combination of those guys they end up getting remains to be seen. But I think you can, again, as the pieces start to fall into play, figure out what the roster might look like and kind of and answer some of those questions and how they might fit with the other guys that we already know are coming back.
You know, and the question a lot of people are asking, Ryan, is, you know, is it time to panic yet? And what I would say is there should be just a general level of panic at having to fill this many, you know, roster spots. So that should be there.
The panic was in January when you knew this was shaping up. I mean,
I don't think there's any more reason right now to panic than there was a week ago or even 2 weeks ago. But, you know, because people are starting to see commitments come in, you know, from other schools. I think you kind of what we've laid out and what, you know, the visits that they've scheduled shows, those are the priority guys. So I think if you start to see the names that we're talking about right here start to commit elsewhere, that's when I would start to get a little bit panicked, because then, you know, hey, we're going to have to hope for some new guys to come out who aren't out yet, or go down to some of our B and C options. So that would be when it would be time to start thinking, okay, what's going on here?
Yeah, I'll say there is some concern from me with the guards they're targeting. And the concern is Miles Rice, great story, by the way. Last year he shot 27.5% from three on 131 attempts.
There's some context there, though.
I understand, but Carlisle, 32% on 100 attempts. So he's 32 for 100. Tony Perkins, in his career, 31.7% last year. He made 23 threes the whole season. Now, again, you're right, Jared. That doesn't necessarily mean that's what's going to be happening at IU, but it feels like the staff has a kind of guard they like, and it's an athletic.
It should
athletic
also be noted
attack.
These are all guys they have connections to as well.
I understand. Understood. But I'm just saying, from a team that has not shot well, it doesn't seem. And again, Connor Hickman, great shooter. I don't know if he would start, you know, given his size and things like that. But a team that desperately needs shooting, it doesn't feel like that's being prioritized. It feels like athletic, attacking, and defending are the three most important things. And that's fine. But we've seen that that combination hasn't really worked with this system so far without the shooters. Now, maybe they're just going full, we don't get shooters open anyway. We're just going to attack the rim. And you know, I mean, who knows? But, and then you look at Tucker, who you got, not a three-point shooter, maybe develops into one, certainly a chance. And there's a chance that, you know, Rice shoots better this year. Carlisle can up his percentage. I mean, that absolutely exists. But I'm just saying, like, you're saying these are the priority guys, and you're probably right. And there are probably guys they would have loved to have, but, you know, are elsewhere or have picked other things, or maybe didn't even enter the portal, guys they thought were. So these are the guys they're targeting. And it's just, you're not seeing knockdown shooters. And again,
that I didn't really expect them to go after pure knockdown shooters because, let's be real, this program hasn't really prioritized that before Liam McNeely. So yeah, I think that's a level of concern for me. I'm not panicking. I'm not hitting a button. I'm not sitting here yelling and screaming. But it's, you look at the stats and it doesn't line up with filling the team's biggest need so far. And there's still more to come. And so that could be the next thing.
Yeah, they did reach out to Jalen Blackman. I haven't seen any visits scheduled. So I mean, they have reached out to some of those guys. It's not.
And there's really other guys serious. That are on the radar, I'm sure.
Yeah. And it's not really serious until there's visits. You know,
completely agree. It's just with the list we have now, that's my only concern. I like Tony Perkins. I really like watching him play at Iowa. I really do. I think he's a bulldog. I think he's a great driver, distributes well, tough kid. I really enjoy
He'd
watching
him. He'd be a
definite
floor raiser for Iowa.
I completely agree. Does he help you in the one place you're missing? No, but he helps you in a bunch of other places. So, I mean, it's not like you have to have everything in the same package for somebody. But I'm just looking at the whole list and saying, yeah, that's something that's missing for me that this program definitely needs.
Yeah, I think the challenge, and that speaks a little bit going back to what we were talking about before, is like, how does it all come together? So you're probably not going to get all three of the guys that are mentioned there who don't shoot it well, at which point you probably would freak out and say, okay, what are we, what's actually going on? So I think it's like, if you took one of those guys and then got somebody else who was a better shooter and whatever, it's just, I agree with you in that sense, though, of the preponderance of guys that they are looking at, that is a weakness, at least statistically, based on what we've seen. But I also think you're not taking three of those, all three of those guys. So maybe that mitigates it a little bit. Yeah. Perkins is the one I didn't really talk about. I think it'd be interesting to see him outside of Iowa's system, somewhat on both ends. Being asked to do a little bit, things differently defensively with what IU does versus what, Iowa, does or doesn't do. You look at the defensive end and then you look offensively where it's a little bit more free flowing and they've got different things that they're doing there and they just play way differently than IU. So he's the player you're most familiar with, but the player that would kind of like have to, would be in a system that's on both ends that's pretty different than what they're used to.
Yes.
So trying to figure out like, well, what does Tony Perkins look like at IU, despite what numbers he's kind of shown and different things like that, is a little bit hard to do. Yeah. As you look through it from a pure system perspective, which part of that is just Iowa and that, they're just different in some of that kind of stuff. But
yeah, one thing I'll add too is they are trying to get guys with multiple years left. And I've heard that internally of the program. I've seen that from the outside. I've heard that from people who are covering other teams in the Big Ten. Indiana is trying hard to get guys with multiple years of eligibility. And the reason why is they don't have any recruits this year. They don't have any recruits locked in 2025 yet, which it's still early for that. But they need... They'll be doing this again next year if they don't get guys with a ton of eligibility. So they may be sacrificing some things this year to have a multi-year guy, or they may be adding bench players. And you're like, how does that fit? They've already got this guy when they're doing it, not just for this year, but for the future as well.
Yep. Any other portal thoughts, things that you guys have seen out there, players that are interesting, whether they're, Indiana or not. I think the story everybody has heard is, what is it, AJ Store? Someone offered him $750,000 and he turned it down because he's waiting for $1 million, I think was the story.
So that's very has made the rounds. Whether that's, it's one of those that you hope isn't true because it's so absurd. But then it's so absurd that it's makes you think that it probably is true. So
do we all? Really,
I mean, I don't think those numbers are outlandish based on, just what you've heard that other players are getting.
Well, and here's the other
confirming that.
I'll say this. If you see a kid go somewhere and wonder why he didn't go to Indiana with all the money that Indiana has, remember, Indiana has to spread that money out around a whole roster where other schools just got to, some of them just have to pick one guy, because they've already got a roster in tow. So that definitely changes the calculus as well. Who can you get when you're spreading the money out? I mean, it's like having a salary cap almost. You've got to find ways to fit everybody in under what your number is. Does everybody think that John L. Davis is going to Michigan?
I think Michigan or Louisville. I think
and Golden.
I mean, I think the easy draw is to say that. What I will say is, like, given the issues that Michigan's had getting some of these guys enrolled over the past, like,
that's fair.
I struggle to think that any of that is an absolute done deal. But it's obviously the easiest dots to connect. And certainly, I'm sure he would love to have them. I think both those guys could play in the Big Ten.
I completely agree.
If they wanted to, I just don't know. And obviously, I don't know anything really about the situations of the guys that they haven't let in versus like the situations of these two guys. So it'll be interesting to see. But yeah, you would certainly think that they would they'll do everything they can to be able to get him in. I just don't know.
That's wild, man. I mean, think how different Juwan Howard's tenure might be if he had gotten Terrence Shannon 2 years ago, because Shannon originally committed to Michigan, and then Caleb Love this year, who originally wanted to go to Michigan.
Caleb Love is tough to truly say that could have gone any number of ways.
But, yeah, especially with he and Doug McDaniel together, that may not have worked.
That would have been explosive.
That might have been fun. It
certainly would have been fun. That's for sure.
I don't really like. I know I said I had done. I attempted to do a little bit of research, so I'll at least give a little bit of this. It's still kind of getting fleshed out a little bit. I did compare notes with Mike a little bit on X's and Joe's to see what he was looking at here. But I tried to look back at guys from major conferences or teams from major conferences that took. I said it at least four guys out of the portal last year, thinking obviously IU's going to play heavily in that space. Although some of it, I think, can be a little misleading because I then went back and kind of looked at how many of the guys actually contributed, right? Because you can go get a bunch of guys, but how many of them are playing? And I set a fairly low bar. I basically looked at the minutes usage on KenPom and set it at 20%. So, like, you're basically a rotation player at that point, but pretty low. Now, there weren't a ton of guys who were, like, right on the border of that, but I just kind of set an arbitrary.
What was Leal's minutes percentage this year? Probably about 20?
I have no idea. I don't know. Probably not that high, I wouldn't guess. I'll let you look that up.
I'll look. You talk.
Rally sound. So, you know, when you look at that, there were only 23.4. Okay, yeah, that's actually higher than I might have thought. But anyway, I looked at least four and at least five, and I think there was about 25 that took at least five. And of those 25, eight made the tournament. Although two of those were New Mexico and NC State. Now, New Mexico, I would argue, should have been in regardless of winning their conference tournament, but the NCAA tournament committee seed list suggests otherwise. So I will say that those two would not have made it otherwise. And so there's eight of those that made it. Those two needed auto bids to do it. North Carolina was the only one that was seeded higher than a six seed. And six more. This was a little bit harder. Either made the NIT or turned it down. I think I tried to remember who had said they weren't going to play and different things like that.
St. John's was one of them.
Yeah, they were one of them. They had tons of transfers, obviously. And then of the ones that had transfers, like had at least five guys play, kind of meet that threshold of at least the 20% of minutes, only two of them made it. One was TCU as a 9 seed. One was NC State as an 11.
Hey, what happened to NC State?
Yeah. And so it's kind of weird. Like, I try to use the verbal commits thing because it's a little bit easier to, like, sort stuff by team.
Sure.
I also found while doing it, as I was trying to reconcile some of it, that it wasn't the, you know, the best in a couple cases. So it was a little bit, you know, not perfect to gauge as you looked at it that way. And then, you know, what Mike could message back to me and said one of the things he was looking at was trying to look at teams, how do you parse out teams who used it because they wanted to versus use the portal heavily because they had to? And I think that's where it gets a little bit tougher to really try and figure out.
Gauge the intentions of the coaches. And
well, and even just to be able to go back and look and kind of say who had to do this.
They lost four
you know,
seniors.
IU kind of is in a position now where they have to do it versus where you planned to, or are you using it just to fill holes on your roster? So if you think about, you know, Kansas used it to get Dickinson and Timberlake, you know, one of those worked out, one of them didn't, but they were kind of trying to fill specific holes of what was there. So then I tried to look a little bit around who ranked around where I looked at where IU finished in KenPom, the end of the regular season this year, and what teams kind of ranked in that vicinity a year ago, kind of figuring teams that really needed to make a leap to get in the tournament. and looking at things like that. So there weren't a ton that kind of met that criteria. I think as I wrote him, there were like six that were ranked anywhere from 80th to 115th at the end of the year, just to IU was low to mid 90s, I think. So kind of giving yourself plus or minus 15 spots either way. And so five of the six increased their end of season ranking by at least 28 spots. So I think you did see from a success standpoint, you did see it. The one that didn't was Vanderbilt. Not really sure you can take a whole lot away from that. But the others were St. John's, Wake Forest, Nebraska, Washington, and Ole Miss. And so as you look through those, like some of those, like Ole Miss, they got a new coach, did all that. St. John's, new coach, had to do that. Vandy, I think Stackhouse probably trying to save his job. That did not work out. But even, you know, so the only one of those that made the tournament was Nebraska. Although if you look at overall performance numbers, St. John's and Wake were really right there.
Yeah.
I think they were two that turned it down. So I don't want to be misleading and say, well, only one of them made the NCAA tournament. I think, you know, I think the other two were top 30, 35 on KenPom. So like took a major step and were by that measure, at least, you know, among the better teams. So I think, you know, kind of reinforces what it feels like we knew, right? Like it's not impossible to improve in that scenario, but definitely an uphill battle and one
and
that,
not the path you want to take.
Not the path you want to take. And that really goes back to, you know, so I'll be interested to see what Mike kind of comes up with on that of how you try to figure out necessity versus intentionality in terms of really needing to use it to fill spots. So I'll probably dig into it a little bit more, but at least like preliminarily, that's what it looks like. And so I think there's, you know, again, if you want to tell a positive story with that, I think there are some positive stories to tell. If you want to tell this is a hell of a, you know, mountain to climb, you can definitely tell that story as well. And I think that's what, you know, kind of some of the concern was you got toward the end of the season that you need a lot. And more than that, you need a lot of guys who are going to contribute. You don't just need bodies. You need guys who are going to contribute. And that's why, you know, maybe not every single one of them, but most of the guys IU is going to bring in through the portal, you're going to be expecting that they're going to have to clear that very low threshold, at least in terms of playing time and all those things and whatever. So that's why I tried to look at it that way, because like that from an IU perspective is what they're going to need. So definitely mixed results. You can go find a whole bunch of teams who started high, dropped spots, did whatever. Like it's a little bit all over the board. There are also some really bad teams in there that had to, you know, DePaul, Georgetown, you know, some of those, like, I think, I don't know if Louisville was on the list or not. They might not have had enough that actually qualified for the minutes piece. So it was a mixed bag for sure as you look through it. And, but at least interesting to start to think about that and figure out what the path can be. And is it a reasonable path for people? Not an easy one, but not impossible, I guess, is the main takeaway of at least what I looked at.
Hopeful data with Andy Bottoms.
Yeah, there you go. That's a new segment we've got.
Yeah.
Just when you think it's all bad, Andy's got a little pinhole of light for you.
Yeah, just a little bit. Yeah, I mean, it's not, I don't want to paint too rosy of a picture, but I think it made me felt, I went into it feeling like this is incredibly bleak. It's less bleak. So, okay.
You know that pinhole you made for the eclipse in a few days? That's what Andy's shining a light through. No, what I think is interesting, and just hearing you talk about that kind of got me sort of on one of the things that some people have been talking about, is eventually I think we're going to get to a point where guys on the bottom end of the top 100 recruits are going to start shunning the big schools, and they're going to start going to smaller schools to be the lead guy for a year, because then that's a better path for them to go wind up where they want to go after proving themselves than being a bench guy on, you know, a Power Five conference team. I think you're going to start seeing recruits strategize that way. Hey, I can go, like, you know, Malik Mack at Harvard, go show out, and then everybody wants you, you know? And so I think that's something to watch over the next few years, is once you're below about 75 on those recruiting rankings and you're not going to be able to contribute right away necessarily, it'll be interesting to see if those guys don't start heading to the mid-majors with a promise of, I get to start and I'm going to have the ball in my hands, help the mid-majors reach an NCAA tournament, and it's beneficial to both parties because you made the NCAA tournament and now the kid is shown off and he can go elsewhere. And so I think you're going to start to see that. And I think it'll be a very interesting development because the bench, that means the benches of the Power Five teams will have to be filled out from the portal or guys they do get from that stack who have to stay 4 years. So it'll be interesting to watch.
Interesting. Well, because you think about if you're a recruit in that scenario, right? Like schools that you may normally have gone to are now turning to portal guys. So the opportunity that in a normal year, somebody of your caliber would have gotten at those schools, like that opportunity no longer exists in the same way that it did before.
Well,
and I think you're starting to see a whole lot more of these success stories of people going, you know, like the Missouri Valley guys that came to the Big Ten this year as an example. Now all of them had played a number of years,
always good Valley, enough.
But you know, you were able to really establish yourself there. And I think even going back to Hickman, as you think about that, like, okay, we have seen in this league a recent track record of guys who had performed well in that league that it translated to Big Ten play in a role for those guys. So, I think you're spot on in terms of more guys going that route just out of necessity and that kind of becomes a minor league system, which I know is what everybody wants it not to be, but it's kind of what it already is. So,
and you think about it, if you are the school and you can't get that guy to come because he's going to go to a mid-major and do that, you're filling out your bench with portal guys. What's the one thing about a bench on the road? Is if they're young, it's going to suck. I mean, that's like one of those things you can always count on. So you're getting veteran guys to play off your bench on the, you know, in big games, you don't have to worry about that freshman adjustment period. So it kind of makes sense for everybody in some ways. The problem is it means that teams have to be in the portal every year grabbing multiple guys to fill out their roster. And that's where it's going to get just, I mean, they created free agency in college sports and with the money included. And you know what?
It'll change at some point.
But. Yeah. And I think at some point they will reinstitute the second transfer, get some kind of penalty. I think they have to, and I think they will.
Or there'll be in employment contracts and
some kind of thing. Yeah. You can transfer once free, you know, related to a coach and they'll do it just free without, you know, anything because of coaching changes, whatever.
Yeah.
But the second one, I think there should be a penalty on the second one, and not a penalty, but just like, you've got to go through something just because it's unfair to the other guys who haven't transferred before, who do get into a bad situation and then can't go where they want to go. That's my thought on it.
Yeah. All right. Well, last topic for the evening, fellas, is the Final Four. It's a disgusting Final Four. It's a Final Four that, you know, I hadn't seen Wolfpack in my life. You know, I was not hoping to see, but here it is. And look, you know, I spent 6 long years in West Lafayette when my dad was up there.
How?
I know.
How?
I know a lot of Purdue fans. Got to know Gene Katie. You know, when you see it happen, you know, I did find myself absolutely disgusted at the result, but able to find some happiness for those guys, those individuals who are deserving. But they've gotten what they deserve, and now they can stop. Now it's over, and it's time for this to end. I don't have a whole lot of confidence in NC State doing it, but I do think UConn.
How magical would that be?
Oh my God, that'd be incredible.
They've won, was it 10 games in a row now? No, 9. They won 9 in a row.
What's the path? I mean, other than just Zach Edey, constant foul trouble.
I think being super physical with Purdue's guards, they do have the guards to shut down their guards.
They do.
Marcel and those guys. And the key against Purdue is if you have guards, they do have some size off the bench too to help out with that, by the way, help DJ Davis out. But
Burns,
what I would say is the way to beat Purdue is to hold Zach Edey to 30, not 40, or 27, not 37. I mean, it's essentially that's what it is. You can't let him get into a rhythm. Anytime he gets into a rhythm, put him on the line. Because if he gets into a rhythm where he's finding space and everything, like Zach Edey is I'll say that, and I've had so many arguments about this, people saying he's the most dominant college player of all time. No, he's not. He's not in the top 10. But he's a very good at what he does.
And that is absolutely 100% true. And he's taken advantage of what his size gives him, and he's become a good basketball player at his size, which normally guys at his size are not skilled or good basketball players. He is. Good for him. But I will say that he's going to have he will have some trouble moving DJ Davis off his spot, because DJ Davis is a load.
DJ Burns.
I'm sorry. DJ Davis.
They do have multiple DJs, although none of them is DJ Davis.
And DJ Davis is a recruit who is doing something. That was what he's a transfer portal guy I was reading about earlier. DJ Burns. Yes. It will be tough to move him off the spot. And so it'll be interesting to see how Purdue works that. Or if they just get him in foul trouble immediately and it won't matter. So, I don't know. NC State, though, this run is amazing. I mean, it's been incredible. If you go back to the ACC, I mean, because Keats was probably going to get fired. And then they won 5 games in 5 days in the ACC tournament and then have blitzed through the NCAA tournament.
I mean, it would have been very much like if Indiana had done this.
Yes.
Like, I mean, NC State was in, I think, like the high 70s when this run started.
Yeah, I mean, they were, I remember sitting watching their tournament game against Virginia, where Virginia had them dead to rights.
They tied it at the buzzer.
In the game, Virginia missed 5 or 6 free throws in the last 2 minutes. The O'Connell banks in a three at the end of regulation to force overtime. And I mean, it seemed like it was completely over. And if that happens, like, they're not even in the tournament, let alone in the Final Four, which just makes this sport just amazing.
The margin is so small. And again, Keats probably gets fired. Like, he was firmly on the hot seat. And now he, by winning the ACC tournament, kicked in like a 2-year extension, too.
And he just landed the big man transfer from Louisville, Huntley Hatfield or whatever. Yeah. So, I mean, he's
good for
got
that.
Some momentum. Got some good momentum.
Yeah.
No, I think
fun too. They are fun.
They are. So we will all be rooting for them. I mean, I think, you know, Purdue is an 8-9-10 point favorite for a reason. And so that's the probable outcome. You know, and if that is what happens, and if UConn takes care of business against Alabama, I think it's fair to say the most intriguing one-on-one matchup in the country is Edie versus Klingon.
Yes.
You know, it's
the one guy.
Big men still are so important in college basketball. You know, they're the two best. It's such a clash of styles. It almost seems like a fitting way for it to end, even though it would be much better for our perspective if it ends now. But that is a fascinating matchup.
And let's be real, those are probably the two best teams all season.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you could quibble Houston, whatever, but those are probably the two best teams.
And Houston would probably be here if Shed hadn't gotten hurt.
That's true. Yeah, and Klingon, the thing about Klingon is he's getting better and better and better every game. I worry about his conditioning because he hasn't played that minutes-wise. He's playing like 22 minutes a game. He's going to have to go 30.
There was an interview.
Just to break in, Sarah Scalia just scored 21 in the first round of the women's three-point.
Sarah Scalia.
Does she have eligibility on the men's
shooting
side?
Legend. No, Matt Painter gave an interview to somebody. Maybe it was John Fanta. I don't remember who. But he was talking about how the extended timeouts during the tournament give them extra rest. And that's why he's been able to play Edie so much more. So, I mean, so you would think, you know, maybe that would help him out with the stamina part.
I would say Klingon and Edie is certainly advantage Purdue, but it's not that wide. I mean, it's he'll finally be facing a guy who's over 7 feet. I mean, Klingon's 7'2" and athletic. So I'll say, but you give that edge to Edie. I think at all the other four spots, UConn has the advantage. And so that's very interesting because it's best, like, national player of the year is the best player, you know, at his position, and everybody else is better. UConn's fast. They play tough. They're tough. They rebound. They run a great offense. Hurley is arguably right now the best coach in the country. I mean,
he's got something to be mad about. The playing situation.
Yeah. And also, they lost 3 of their 4 best players off last year's team, and they're better this year.
Yeah.
I mean, what he's doing reminds me of what Coach K was doing in the early 90s. I mean, just replace the guys, keep the train rolling, like, make all the right decisions.
Ted Valentine shows up. Some team is in deep crap. Mm-hmm.
what's your like, because UConn's been the best team in the tournament. I don't think it's even close. I think I said after the first weekend, it's UConn versus the field is the bet. And I probably would have picked UConn. Yep.
The fact that they went on a 30-0 run against Illinois, the impressive part about that was not the 30 points. It was the fact that they held Illinois, who I believe at the time had the nation's number one offense, number to one. 0 points, real time, 50 minutes. They didn't score a basket in real time because it was one half to the other. That was the most impressive part. I love UConn right now. I think, UConn, Purdue.
Are we giving Alabama any chance?
I think they'll be in it.
Just 3-point variance, basically.
Yeah.
Like if they get super hot.
And I think they'll be in it at halftime. And then I think UConn wears them down.
Yeah.
There's too much up, up and down for that. Last year's Alabama team, I would give more of a chance than this year's, I think.
Yeah. And I think UConn's got enough athletic guys on the perimeter to kind of hound Alabama enough to throw them off a little bit. But yeah, I mean, they have a chance just because the way they play is going to give them a chance if they are insanely hot. As they go,
someone scoring 100 points in that game.
The Illinois UConn game. We were visiting my mother in law, and so my wife and my mother in law took a walk at halftime of the game, and they came back in after a little bit. Second half had begun a little while. I go, well, the good news is that you have not missed one Illinois basket. I said they are now down by 20, and they have not scored and whatever. And they're both like, what? I'm like, no, they have not scored a single point since you left the house.
And so. Illinois had been playing very well up until that point, too. And
yeah, I like that. I mean, convenient the coach isn't on here to defend Underwood's game plan of trying to drive at Donovan Klingon repeatedly. But, you know,
maybe
another offseason show we can do that. If he blocks 100, he blocks 100. Well, Brad.
Honestly, in this tournament, Klingon's probably been their MVP. I mean, if you look at some of the numbers he's put up, I think Newton's their best player, but I think Klingon's been their MVP. And Spencer has been, he does what he does. I mean, he talks a lot of trash, and then he'll hit 4 threes in a row and back it up. He's scrappy too. So, yeah, I really like UConn. I think they're going to win it, and I picked them to start. And I just think they're better than everybody. And I think Indiana, it's really funny. I had some friends who were not impressed with UConn when Indiana played them. I was like, they played horribly for 2/3 of that game. And then at one point they were like, oh yeah, we got to win this game, and won by 20. Like, it was so.
And they were still really at that point, still kind of figuring. I mean, they had enough new pieces. They're still trying to kind of figure stuff out, but
they didn't look like a team at that point. They looked like they were kind of thrown together.
Yeah. When they're rolling, they're
now they're a freight train.
One of the better teams that I've seen in recent years. I mean, I remember that Villanova team that rolled everybody in the tournament. Yes. It reminds me of that. Like, it's just a machine.
Yes.
So
we'll see what happens. Hopefully it is UConn against NC State, but we'll watch on Saturday, cheer against those Boilers, and see what happens on Monday. Any final thoughts from you gentlemen before we sign off for the evening?
No, it's nice doing this again on a Thursday. It's been a while.
It is. It is nice doing it on a Thursday. What games are tomorrow? Tomorrow is UConn, Iowa, right? Paige Becker's Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, women's. Yep.
And then tomorrow's the women's Saturday.
South Carolina, NC State on the other side of that.
Does Iowa UConn outdo Iowa LSU ratings wise? That's a question.
I don't know.
I don't think it will. I think it'll be the highest rated Final Four game of all time.
I'm more interested in Iowa UConn than I was Iowa LSU. The Caitlin Clark matchup is.
Well, and Beckers is probably going to be the star next year, like the big national star next year. So.
Yeah, but they'll have some mono. She was
unbelievable down the stretch in that USC game.
Yeah. Like, and the USC Juju Watkins is going to be a star. I've read all about her.
She does things athletically that I have not seen in women's basketball.
I mean, she was the number one recruit for, I do follow a USC recruiting site, and I remember them talking about her. I'm like, who is this? And I started reading about her before she got there, and I saw some highlights. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. She just has like an athletic fluidity that is just kind of uncommon.
It's a new generation, man.
Yeah.
Of player.
But, you know, that's the thing. I was having this discussion with somebody. It's like, is all this new attention going to stick around when Caitlin Clark is gone? It's like, no, the numbers will probably be less, but what's important is how many of the people who were just casual and checked it out because of her looked at it and said, damn, there's like well-played basketball going on here.
And here's the other thing. how many kids that might play another sport have been inspired by her will now focus on basketball to be the next Caitlin Clark. And it's going to be wave after wave. But the women that are in that are right now and the how multi-skilled they are and how athletic they are, it reminds me of how when LeBron came in and then every year there was another guy who was like 6'8 and played like a guard. Like they just started popping up everywhere. And I think that's what we're going to start seeing in women's basketball, especially.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's all without mentioning the team that's undefeated in
the final. Best team in the country. Yeah.
I know. And they were really heavy portal team, weren't they?
I don't know how many, I think so. I definitely follow the IU women's team and I will follow other teams in the Big Ten a little bit, but I hadn't really watched or seen too much of South Carolina until I was doing a little bit of prep for the show with Kathy and whatever. And it did seem like they had a number of transfers. I felt like as they were going through the game, they're like, oh, and such and such from whatever they, although they still had, they're so deep and played a bunch of people last year. Like they just kind of had everybody kind of moved up a chair or two in the rotation and you added some, you added some transfers and did that.
And you have the best coach in the country.
Incredible. Man. Yeah. So they're incredible. Although IU gave them everything they wanted after
that was a great game,
man. We just needed
IU outplayed them in the second half. I mean, they did for the bulk of the second half, but
two more minutes.
But that's what happens when you play an all-time great team. I mean, you can play your best game and not win, you know, and there's nothing to be ashamed of.
Yep. Agreed.
That is true.
Should be good games for sure.
All right.
All righty. Well, that is going to do it for us on this week's edition of the Assembly Call. If you want to see us do the show live, join us at assemblycall.com on Thursday nights for the live broadcast of our Assembly Call radio recording. Thank you to Bob Thompson for producing our music. Thank you to John Ringer of rigdesign.com for designing our logo. And thank you for listening. We'll be back to talk IU hoops again with you next Thursday. Until then.
Take it from me, Rob Tennessee. Keep your eyes on the rim and your elbows in. Go Hoosiers.
Thank you. Thanks for coming out.
I think they've gotten enough show.